I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
From the icy reaches of Montreal, Canada, Solid Gold Effects are effects pedal creators who constantly reinvent the wheel with their wonderful devices. If you, like us, are looking for something more than just another chorus, fuzz or flanger, then that's exactly what Solid Gold Effects do best. From the Oblivion, a quadruple-voiced flanger with a whole bunch of internal dip switches, to the Lysis, a polyphonic octave down fuzz modulator, Solid Gold are just a great shout if you want to do something different, make weird noises, or if you're just looking for something a bit more fun. Check out their range of ultimately original soundscape devices at solidgoldeffects.com. We think they're wicked. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Naomi McLeod.
Hello.
And Jay Cross.
It's me.
It is you, that's right. So there's the three of us this week. A rare, rare week in Guitar Nerds history where Matt Knight is taking a week off. I can't remember what he's doing with his week off. He sort of messaged earlier and was like, good night tonight. Good luck with the podcast recording tonight, guys. And I can't really, I didn't want to sort of be like, what are you doing again?
So well, I didn't ask him.
I
got a Runkeeper push notification that said that he ran 10 miles yesterday. So I don't know, maybe.
Right.
Maybe he's just got his feet up. Maybe he's just like, look, I'm going to run 10 miles and I don't want to talk to you idiots.
Might just be chilling hard.
This seems fair enough.
Well, I know that he's not at home because I delivered something to him and it said it couldn't be delivered. So,
guys, this is serious personal tabs. You both seem to be able to keep on him.
and if you want to
know
where
he was
Matty
out
lives.
For a run.
No, he just popped to the shop. He saw the UPS delivery driver coming and was like, no more stuff. Yeah. No more stuff. That's what it was, I reckon.
Well, there you go. Well, I am excited about what I've delivered to him because it's something we're going to talk about on... We're not going to go into it on this week's episode because they've literally arrived with Matthew and I today. I'm just going to pick mine up for no reason, as this isn't a visual medium. But anyway,
it looks great.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Jay. The new second generation Isotope Spire, the fantastic demo recording unit that we were so excited about when the first one came out. There is now a second generation where, honestly, I was on a call with Dan Pilver from Isotope, and he was talking through all the things that they've changed on the second generation. And I was just like, wow, it just feels like everything they'd changed was a thing that I'd thought about the first one. You know, the first one was fantastic, but, you know, with all things, there are things where you're like, oh, well, you know, it'd be great if you could do this or that. And they seem to have answered every single thing you could possibly think of to make it a better unit. So I'm very excited to get to try this out, and then we're going to talk about it probably next week or the week after.
Cool.
Me and Matt will talk about these. But, you know, Jay, you know, you thought this was a great product as well, first time round. Naomi, do you know what we're talking about, the Isotope Spire? Have you seen these?
I have seen them, yeah. I've not had one in hand, and honestly, I still haven't gotten into the mobile. So we're talking about the mobile recording interface, right?
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, it's a big,
super neat little cylindrical.
Yes, it's a cylindrical thing. Unit. It kind of reminds me of, although it doesn't look like it at all, just the fact that it's round and it's a technology device reminds me of the thing in Dolph Lundgren's He-Man movie. Yeah, that thing. I mean, that thing had lots of little spears in the top. But if the Isotope Spire had spears in the top of it, I kind of feel like it would be like the thing.
Yeah, that's a lot cooler than my impression, which was one of the several Amazon devices, like the Echo Dot type thing.
Yes.
Yeah, but so I have kind of shied away from mobile interfaces only because I've always kind of liked having a desktop set up and somewhere for all of my synths and basses.
Convenience,
and bits.
Not for Naomi.
Not
no,
for
thank
me.
Thank you.
Mm-mm, I avoid it like the plague. Not a fan. But this looks awesome. I'm also I don't know. I'm well into the trend for much bigger meters as well, which I'm guessing is what takes up most of the face of the spire. Is that correct? Yeah. Is it's meter?
Yeah. There's something about very sort of cool. There's something about this device that's reminiscent of those phones with the massive numbers.
Yes, the dial phones. You mean the accessibility phones.
Yes, I do.
Yes,
I do.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Those sort of things with like the huge display, huge record, huge play button, and then the three, they've isolated the three sort of key features that you're going to need. Starting a new song, doing a sound check, which is where it applies all its compression and levels to whatever your room is, and then controlling the volume, which you can then do via touch on the big meter that goes
on that same meter, right? Okay, yeah. So is it a bit like a ribbon controller?
Yes, exactly.
Design?
Yeah.
That's very cool. I'm guessing as well. Is it sort of aimed at those beginning to get into recording as well? Just with the wording of new song, sound check, and volume. As someone who's used to interfaces, I don't know what those correspond to.
I think it's designed for ease. I actually kind of think the device is designed for everyone. It's a great kind of this is something that anyone can use, whether you're an expert or not. But the crucial thing that separates it from, you know, a desktop door and an interface is that you don't need to have watched 100 hours of YouTube demos in order to get your head around it. Like it's a really sort of you know, you'll have your phone and the Spire. It's really straightforward. It's really easy to get an idea down. And then kind of all the presets that you'll have on the phone in order to apply effects like reverb. And let's, you know, remember this is an Isotope product. So the mic preamp itself is obviously off the bat is incredible. But then all of the additional features that you get with the Isotope Spire, the reverbs. They even have amp models and stuff on there because in the back of the Spire, there are a couple of direct inputs if you just want to plug your guitar straight in. But it's a really cool unit. Like the sound check feature there is not only there to sort of set levels, it also recognizes what instrument you're playing, whether you're singing and playing guitar at the same time. It will say, oh, you're singing and playing a guitar. You know, if you're playing a piano, it will recognize that you're just playing a piano. And it's
that's awesome.
Yeah,
really,
yeah.
Really into that as a feature. Yeah, and like you say, like Isotope are a company who absolutely know what they're at, don't they? They have a fantastic track record in sort of audio processing and effects.
Yeah, exactly. And I said we'd go into this next week, and I've kind of gone off on one, but very briefly on the last of it, Isotope have a pro feature with it, so you get like the standard Spire app that comes with your unit, but you can also pay for an additional, like an Isotope Pro thing. And then you get these extra features with your Spire unit, which includes all of their vocal processing. So,
amazing. Okay.
All of those, like, you know, the Nectar things that treat all the vocals. And it actually includes auto-tune on there as well.
Oh, wow.
So you could do all of that without touching a computer, which I think is a really interesting feature. I had a lot of fun applying the the vocal correction to me playing piano. Just I wanted to see what it would do. And it just
were you doing was this for your upcoming Black Eyed Peas cover set?
Yeah, exactly. It did just sound very, very strange, but nonetheless, fantastic unit. I'm looking forward to, you know, plugging in the second generation and seeing what weird things me and Matt can create with it. So
awesome. We'll
see. Yeah,
that's very good.
Is it still battery powered? Or it can be battery powered.
It can be, yeah. So you charge it up, and then you can use it completely wirelessly, which is obviously
because you used you took it out and did some like field recordings and stuff, right? When you did your slow project.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we did some stuff where we wanted to do some like natural reverb things. So we had Emma playing piano in the lounge, and then I opened the lounge door and the back door and put the spire in the garden. So you got like all these. Like all the, you know, you get lots of little birds in our sort of villagey area, and our neighbours over the back have all these bird feeders, so there are always loads of little chaffinches and things knocking around there. So you had all this like the chirping of birds and outdoor sounds mixed with like the sort of that the sound of a piano in a house when you're not in a house, that sort of really distant.
Yeah, no, that's really cool.
It was really cool for kind of creating that without me having to, you know, try to
run a really long cable outside and,
yeah, and set up boundary exactly. mics and stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Well, actually, I guess that's a really good feature. The mic and the preamp unit on this are, you know, are absolutely top quality. So you know, when it comes to and the alternative being having to take a nice mic and run a long cable somewhere, if you're wanting to do things like that, this is actually a great kind of secondary purpose for it.
And I mean, you know, listening to where I live, you take anything outside, you've got the concern that a seagull will do a big dump on it. So yeah, like, you don't want that on your Neumann, do you? No, you know, that would be a complete nightmare.
Exactly. So that's your assessment of the Isotope Spire, is it, Jay? An okay recording device to take a dump on.
Yes, yeah. No, not me, the seagulls, you know.
Right, just, right, of course.
Yeah. That's all it is. Got it. That or an SM57, you know, that would probably be fine as well, let's be honest.
Yes, of course. Now, Naomi, it's kind of been a few weeks maybe since we've had you on a podcast, at least three, I think, since we've had you on a podcast, and you've moved in that time.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I got in a massive huff because I wasn't on the podcast for a few weeks, and I decided to move house.
But Joe tracked you down.
He still tracked me down, much like Matt Knight, who, as we've figured out, is probably living in fear. He says he's on a week off, but really he's just running from both of you. Yes, but I have, as you say, Jay, been tracked down in my new base cave. So yeah, I've stayed in the same city, in lovely Leeds, and moved to have a little bit more room for myself, room for my gear. Got a nice setup. I actually have room for bass cabs again, which I didn't have for the last while. Ooh. So it's gonna face me with some interesting shopping options that I hadn't had for a little while. So yeah, it's been good. Got all my bits set up. For the first time in a very long time, I installed a pickup, would you believe, in my Squire Classic Vibe, which I think we...
Oh, well, your Classic Vibe Precision.
Yeah.
So do you have the 70s Precision?
I do, exactly.
That bass is really good. That's like one of my favourite from that range. It's
right,
so good.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you remember it's the black, the black with the maple neck.
It's maple neck with black block inlays, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly it. And the bridge cover. So
the bridge cover. That's the bit a few weeks ago you talked about like playing your first gig, and I guess it must have been with that bass where you didn't realize that there would be a bridge cover, and all of a sudden you couldn't.
And I talked about how much I hated it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And my Pam certainly hated it. That was a very bad time. But yeah, no, I committed a form of chronological sacrilege. I got from a friend a pickup I've wanted for a long time, which is the Aguilar 60s P bass, and thought I would try it in the Classic Vibe, and I'm delighted. Absolutely wonderful. I've played basses before with the 4P60 in. Joe, have you played basis with that?
I have a surprisingly little contact with anything Aquilar, actually.
I see. Okay.
When we were all at GAC, I think GAC were quite late in the day to get Aquilar into our store. I also think it was kind of when we worked there was around the time that it was first getting into the country. And I don't know, like the first things I saw those pickups in were stuff like the Spectres were moving off of EMGs and Bartolini's and into these. And I guess, and this is totally not fair, but I really like EMGs and I really like Bartolini's. And so when Aguilar pickups were replacing them, I almost disliked Aguilar for replacing these two brands that I like, which is totally unfair. But I think maybe I haven't given Aguilar a fair crack of the whip when it comes to their products because I already in that field had kind of quite established opinions on what I liked. But these are passive, though, the 60s ones, right?
Yes, they are indeed. Yeah, and I'm going to crack you now with my Aguilar 60s P-Bass whip and tell you that you should absolutely try them. They're wonderful. I mean, they're just really, does what it says on the tin. I hate to use that term, but they're a really beautiful, warm, kind of woofy 60s tone. And then the 70s equivalent that they did, I'm not sure if they're still current models, actually. I would need to look that up. But they are... I'm just looking through them here.
They're kind of like
So they still do a 51, and then they certainly still have the 4P60s which I've put in. But yeah, they again just super simple P type. They are what was I going to say? They are just single conductor and cloth.
They're very cool. I mean, it's kind of a really solid blend, isn't it? Like the classic vibe with a pickup like that, because the classic vibe is off the bat, especially that 70s classic vibe, a bass that punches like far beyond its weight. And certainly when it comes to kind of feel, the neck, the looks, everything about it is like, well, this is already very good. So coupling it with a high quality pickup,
absolutely.
Pretty much a dream.
Yeah, no, it made sense to me. And also, like, for all of the kind of quirkier, slightly more niche pickups that I've tried, these were a set that I know I've liked and wanted for as many years as I've known about them. So it kind of made sense, again, to put them into, like you say, a bass that I know is deserving, let's say, of maybe a slight pickup upgrade.
Yeah, very cool.
Joe, did you have much experience with, like, the tone hammers and stuff? Because I never really... I don't think I've ever plugged in an Aguilar amp, but, just sort of changing course a little bit and talking about the amps. I seem to remember that the tone hammers were quite popular when we were at GAC.
Yeah, towards the end, I think they were, because they were one of the first kind of Class Ds, I think, that were going after people who actually like the sound of old amps. You know, because I think before that, you know, everything was like Mark Bass, TC, Eden, all these brands were very much like, here is a new sound, which is great and perfect in its own right. But for people who wanted to sound like Ampegs or Ashdowns, old Oranges, Fender amps, stuff like that, there wasn't like a Class D amp going after that, not really. I guess Mark Bass had their I can't remember. They had a control that would like give you kind of a nice woolly 60s sound, but
wait,
you
know, sorry, on the Mark Bass stuff.
Yeah, they had
the VLE.
There was the vintage loudspeaker emulator.
That's on the Little Mark 3, which actually I've got Mark Packham, our own Little Mark. I've got that at my house at the moment. My own Little Mark 3.
That was very good. So that was a really good way of getting a vintage tone out of a Class D amp. But I think Aguilar really went out after it because they also included like a separate drive control on there. So it was a smart move, smartly branded. I mean, Naomi, you play Aguilar amps anyway.
I do. I have done up till now, yes. I had a Tonehammer 500 first, which I had for a long time. I think I got that in 2012, 2013, and had it up until 2019. Yeah, and it was just an absolute workhorse. It was solid as a rock, could really give me the kind of sweep that I wanted. I could go super woolly. I mean, I was playing, yeah, it, I think it's a good mark of kind of what I like, my impression of workhorse gear, when you can be playing a ton of styles and still have the same amp, still have the same head, and not really feel at a loss playing across those styles. I mean, I was playing really kind of heavy grunge stoner music. I'll be killed for saying stoner music, stoner rock, and you know, like in the same week, kind of doing kind of covers and funk gigs and you know, R&B and soul all through the Tonehammer 500. So it kind of packed all the punches I needed it to. And then from there went to the AG 700, which I really like as well. But if I'm honest, I probably would have gone for the, given the chance, I probably would have gone for the more powerful Tonehammer that was released. I'm forgetting, was it 750 or 700?
I think it was 750.
I think it was the 750, yeah.
The AG 700 was a much bigger head, wasn't it, than the Tonehammer?
Not a huge amount bigger, no. I don't know, are you thinking of the DB?
Oh, maybe I am, yeah, you're
the
right.
The DB is kind of full size, and is valve as well, I think. It's certainly not class, yeah. D anyway, but whereas the AG is class D, but yeah, not quite as shoeboxy as the Tonehammer. But no, I remain a huge fan of the lightweight heads, and I think, yeah, it's a trend that I'm not sure has kind of reached its peak or potentially passed it, but I'm still all for kind of lightweight gear where possible.
Sure. Yeah, and yeah. I think that's going to continue anyway, like, you know. You got to bear in mind the fact that nobody's played any gigs for 12 months and they don't, yeah. nobody's got any muscles anymore. So, you know, lugging around a big, heavy 100-watt amp is not going to be in anybody's best interest anymore.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
we're all going to be very tired.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know, my band's keyboard player has spent the last, you know, year of lockdown expanding his modular synth setup, so he's
right,
changed from having a
he?
Couple of convenient small, you know, digital synthesizers to building a rack, which he now wants to take on tour. And this is, I mean, a full,
I'm telling you, Joe, this is that you bringing in a keyboard player to your band was the first step in you getting kicked out of the band so that they could make more room for gear in the van.
Well, like, that's exactly it. So it's actually been a conversation of this, the synth rack is now so big that we're like, well, the rest of the band were like, Joe, you know, you want to bring this CTM 300, my 300 watt valve head, which is like a two man lift in its own flight case, and my two single 15s. They were like, you know, you also have a 112 and about four like 500 watt class D heads that could fit in the front of a gig bag. You could just bring those. So I think I'm going to be forced into downsizing.
Well, you know, the thing is, Joe, is when you invite Keith Emerson into your band, you just need to bear in mind the fact that there's going to be compromises. And unfortunately, yeah, those compromises are you having anything that will make you be able to hear your bass while you're playing live.
Well, there's a good question. Do you guys think I could gig with a 112? Do you think that's a reasonable thing for a bass player to do?
A mic'd 112.
Mic'd.
Yes. Well, it would be, you know, it would be DI'd, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would be DI'd through the front of house. Do you think, but DI's, you know, I guess if I took DI a bit more seriously and started running a second out from my board as my DI with like a cab sim on it rather than like just a head DI, because they can sound a little plain.
Yeah.
Do you think that's reasonable, or am I being silly? Should I still go for a larger amp on stage?
I mean, I'm a huge fan of volume on stage and preferably from behind me as well. And I've just accepted that that's something I really rely on. So like in terms of practicality, you know, if you're going to be on in-ears, like do you play, is the band on in-ears or
no.
How is everyone monitoring?
No.
Are you going to be using wedges, do you think?
Yeah, wedges.
That's that's the issue for me is it really depends on how loud you are on stage.
Mm. Well, you're an 810 player, Jay.
Well, I bought an 810 in between playing a gig and now. Like, I've never actually used it. Actually, no, that's not true. I think I have played one gig since I bought the 810, but I was like, I'm not taking this to the show. Are you mad? I left it in the house. I just plugged into the 4x10 that was there. I think it just really depends on what your what the situation is. Like, the problem is like, Chris is a loud drummer, isn't he? So
yeah,
you need to be like to be able to be heard over what everyone else is, what he's doing. Mm. Everyone else needs to be able to hear you, or they need to be able to play without relying on having to hear you. You know, it's the other option.
It's a good point. You're right. I'm going to stick with 215s and a massive 300 watt head. Yeah. That's
good man. Yeah. Like, there's a point at which it's like, you know, you need to balance practicality with what you actually want out of the cab to begin with. If you want to be heard on stage, then don't bring a cab that's not going to do that job for you. Do you know what I mean? That's why I was saying would it be mic'd, because like, would it just become this thing where it's mic'd and DI'd as it would be recording, so that you can have it back in the wedge? Mm. And at that point, is it better to have the sound behind you or in front of you, you know?
That is a good point. Mm. Well, yeah, I guess we will see. I am loath to bring something smaller, but yes.
It really depends on what you're doing. You know, if you're playing in front of 150 people, then, you know, 112 is probably going to be okay. But if you're playing on a big stage outside at a festival, then it almost certainly won't be.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a deluxe reverb or like an AC30, is it? Like, where you can take that and you would be able to be heard. It really depends on the context of what you're gigging, you know, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, I appreciate we've spoken about bass for a lot of this, so we are going to move over onto actually talking about guitars and things. But before we do, I did just want to talk about Jay Douglas guitars. This very small UK custom shop, in fact, from Leeds, Naomi.
Indeed.
Local to you. But yeah, check them out, dear listener. Jay Douglas Guitars is the Instagram handle where you can check out all John Douglas's instruments. I was thumbing through reverb.com as it was like just searching for instruments, and I came across a handful of Jay Douglas's. He was selling off prototypes he'd made of his Blunderbird basses. He had a reverse and a non-reverse, or you know, a reverse and a conventional Blunderbird bass. In fact, as we're talking, because I've only purchased the reverse one, so the normal one is still up there. They're like 600.
Oh, you have bought one?
I've bought it, yes.
Oh, my God.
I bought it, yeah. I had to buy it. It was so cool and so interesting.
Which one is that then?
So if you're on his Instagram, the Blunderbird bass, as we're recording this, you'll probably post more, but the Blunderbird basses, there are two side by side. They are kind of the double cut Les Paul-esque bass with a big single coil in the middle. Now, if you scroll through his page, there's the normal one, which has the longer horn on top. And a little bit further down, you'll find that there is one where the longer horn is on the bottom. Now, he actually told me he made that by mistake because he carved out the back the wrong way round and was like, oh.
Amazing.
So he said he actually made it first, like before he made it the correct way round. So it's like a reverse before there was even a conventional side one. But these were his prototypes as he was kind of trying to find a voice, and he still is sort of developing his style and everything. I just thought it was so interesting and different and cool.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. I love how he's kind of put his stamp across a bunch of different classic shapes, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I hate to use the word promising about a fellow adult because I feel like a very old child myself. But yeah, like what he has up here is super cool. Is that like a Sandberg kind of homage in the model he has at the top of the page? See the one with the,
So the triple pickup bass.
Yeah, that's the one I'm looking at.
I feel like that's more a Shergold. I feel like that's a Shergoldy style shape, but he winds his own pickups as well. Those oversized single coils with the big bolt pole pieces. Those are all wound himself. So that's what it will be in this pickup. And it's a lovely mahogany body with binding, dear listener. Obviously, you haven't checked this out as you're listening with a. It's a medium scale, 32 inches, lovely 2x2 headstock, gorgeous thick single ply. Scratch plate and a sort of, you know, it is Les Paul-esque, double cut Les Paul-esque with an interesting, you know, interesting horns that are quite different. And he doesn't just do basses. In fact, he does, you know, more guitars. The basses are almost kind of a newer addition. There are Rickenbacker influenced shapes that he's applied kind of a modern, more exaggerated twist to in both guitar and bass form. He's done some T-style guitars that look as if they've like look as if the bridge and the pickup are really far down the body. Or maybe the body's cut shorter, but like interesting, slight modifications on shapes. I love everything about all of these instruments, and kind of wood finishes is the name of the game with these.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
In fact, there is another prototype on his Reverb shop at the moment, which is one of the Rickenbacker-esque basses, this time with a great big mudbucker in kind of the lower middle section of the instrument. But
clackalacka is the comment on that one.
Really? Yeah, I can't remember what that one's called.
That's not on the mudbucker one.
Oh, there you go.
But, I thought that was a funny word. Clackalacka. there's some cool looking stuff on here, Joe.
Yeah
cool. I'm loving the mahogany bodies. I would be well curious to try one.
His
builds just look really, really stylish. And I like, as I said, it looks like he's just kind of put a stamp on every aspect, you know. I love that he's made his own pickups. I love on the Blunderbird, I absolutely love the knobs. Are they classic to any model?
Gibson-esque knobs, yeah.
They're Gibson-esque, but is that colour standard to Gibsons as well? The sort of see-through, like, kind of caramel colour?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice touch.
It is, yeah. They're really nice, really well-presented, really well-built instruments. £625 for the Blunderbird on Reverb. That's an unbelievable price for a custom shop instrument. I absolutely couldn't possibly resist. So, you know, I'll talk more, you know, next week when I get the instrument. Obviously, because I play in silly tunings, I've had to send him my stupid 65 to 120 strings so right. he can set it up for me with those. Because
I mean, the Ricky style one, which, you know, is open to interpretation, of course, if that's how you want to style it. But it's even that's sub £700. I mean, it's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, very aggressive prices. I had a chat with John, and I will continue to have a talk with him more over the next
Trail
few weeks.
Dagger.
Yeah, it's Trail Dagger. That's the
Trail
name.
Trail
yeah.
Dagger.
It's a good name. Solid name.
Yeah, really good.
But yeah, I was speaking to him about it, and he was talking about how he's kind of, you know, still developing, and he's finding his voice in instruments at the moment, which is why he's priced everything so aggressively, because he appreciates that he's still working out what he's doing. But I just, you know, so original. It's so totally not like anything else that's being made at the moment. You know, I couldn't possibly resist it. Also, £10 in weight, the Blunderbird. £10.
Nice.
That's a heavy instrument.
It's mahogany, isn't it? So that is, crikey, you are going to be very top heavy. Like, you know, the way you play your basses, just the slightest gust of wind will send him absolutely
Don't
flying.
Push him. Don't push him.
Yeah, exactly. I've gone for the reverse one as well, so I'm probably going to be falling over. I'm probably going to be falling forward as well, or at least the neck will be.
Yeah, you'll have to find a nearby railing to lean into. Exactly. Yeah, these are cool. I don't know. I feel like, I don't want to make any calls, but I feel like this is the sort of builder that in a few years' time you could be like, I had an early J. Douglas.
Yeah, really like them. Love that they've got stamped on the back, made in Yorkshire.
Yeah, absolutely.
Reminds me of the Fidelity have crafted in Cambridge. I think it's crafted.
Oh, do they? Yeah. So that's always a nice touch. Yeah, super like local. It.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Very, very cool. But yeah, excited to receive that. And dear listener, I'll keep you posted. Now, on the effects front, this week, a pedal turned up for us. A limited edition Sparkle Shell Pink Solid Gold Effects Surfrider Mark III. Which
it's almost like these companies know how to, like, you know, get us talking about them, innit? it's really weird. It's just like it's like they just know. I don't know how.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it remains a mystery, to be honest.
Is that a
maybe
pedal
next week we'll find out?
Yeah, a pedal that they've done for some time, but this one is heavily limited edition. Version. I don't think there are very many out there, but I was very pleased to be sent one from Solid Gold. Solid Gold Effects obviously have been a brand that we've spoken about quite a bit over the last few weeks, and they are good friends of the podcast, and they make some absolutely cracking pedals. Obviously utterly blown away with the Imperial Fuzz recently, one of the best things I've tried in a long, long time. But the Surfrider Mark III is a kind of a well-established reverb, very, very much in sort of 60 cycle hum Ryan's area, which is very drippy, a drippy reverb, and he does like that surf drip on his reverb pedals. But the thing for me about the Surfrider, dear listener, is that it achieves versatility in what is quite a conventional effect via the second switch, the boost switch, which allows you to switch between kind of the low and high reverb settings, essentially. So you can go from, and that tends to be how I would use a reverb pedal. I want my 60s splashiness, and then I want my ethereal soundscape reverb. Those are the two sounds. And that boost switch, by boosting your reverb level, allows you to flick between something you can use quite conventionally and then something that you might use with volume swells, for example, just for, you know, a big, big soundscape tone. Dead simple and, you know, just an absolutely fantastic sounding reverb pedal. I thoroughly recommend it just for the chance to own a limited edition shell pink version of what is an absolutely cracking pedal. Yes. Very good. Very good. But yeah, do check it out. Do check it out. I think it's limited edition to the UK. I'm not sure. So see where you can find it, dear listener, and check it out. An excellent pedal indeed. Before we move on to the news, guys, I just want to talk about plugin of the week. Very briefly. I realize I've done an awful lot of talking this podcast. I do apologize.
No,
both of you.
Go ahead.
No need to apologize to us, Joe. It's lovely to hear your dulcet tones.
Yeah, I think maybe possibly I can speak for Jay, but when you were talking about the Surfrider there, I wasn't not wanting to have input. It was just a really nice piece, I thought.
Thank you.
I'd appreciate if you don't talk for me there, Naomi, on that one.
Sorry, Jay. I'm very sorry. You know what? No worries. I'm going to go move house again. I'm going to go return in 4 to 5 weeks. So I'll step right back out.
So this week, yeah, so I was looking around for what new plugin am I going to purchase this week? And I was kind of looking at effects, like, yeah, I've moved so much towards recording everything, via plugins that I was like, well, you know, maybe I should look at moving my pedal board onto plugins as well. So I started searching around for those, but, you know, I didn't find anything that really lit my fire. Not at first. And then I stumbled across something that was totally different, totally un-guitar related, but you could definitely apply it to guitar and it could be a really weird, awesome effect. Audio Thing. Oh my goodness. AudioThing.net. Oh my goodness. I think I might buy all of their plugins. They've just released a new plugin with the wonderful German dance-ish, I don't know. It's music that doesn't involve guitars, musician Hennybach. Yeah, whatever, one of those.
Okay. And electronic.
Anyway, exactly, electronic. That was the word I was looking for. Anyway, he's introduced the motor, the Things motor, and I absolutely love it. I even trying to explain this effect. So this is, it's based on, here we are. So it's based on an original piece of equipment called the Crystal Palace, which was, it was a tool that allowed, I'm trying to find the actual bit that says specifically what it is. Okay, so here we are, the Crystal Palace. It was built for the BBC Radiophonic Workshop. It was a one-of-a-kind instrument that allowed speed-dependent switching of up to 16 audio channels. And it did that via a massive capacitor that rotated on a motor to switch between those channels physically.
Wow.
Obviously, this does it, you know, just as a plug-in. But as in, you can record two things in, say they are an organic drum kit, an electronic drum kit, or an acoustic guitar and electric guitar, two vocals doing different things, and it will pan between the two of them rhythmically, and you can set that rhythm, and you can set the balance, you can set the tremolo, the vibrato, and the panning, and the speed to which it is switching between the two of them. So you get this sort of thing, but with two different sounds, two different inputs going on. It's just,
so it's kind of like what DJs do with the mixer,
yes,
with a fader,
yes,
but it's, you can program it
exactly,
and you can program it and turn it into like a rhythmic tool as opposed to having to do it manually.
Exactly. So yeah, and you can have it do it sort of lightning fast or sort of weirdly and slowly, and being able to add vibrato onto that just means you can create such weird new things. Just a wonderfully expressive plugin. And get this, it's £9. Well, it's
yeah, it's in my cart. I'm doing the Joe Branton cart.
So here we are
live, adding to cart.
That leads on to my next problem. I added it to cart and it went, oh, you like the Things motor. Hey, do you know about the Things texture? It's our it's our simple reverb. It's also £9. And I was like, oh, just watch a video, and it's got like a it's got sort of shimmer effects on there. It was just
Look at this one. Oh,
yeah, Joe, it was good. And so I was like, okay, well, I'll take that as well. And I was like, right, I'll buy those. So I bought both of those. And then Audio Thing messaged me like in my sort of receipt on their site and went, oh, hey, seeing as you've just bought a couple of things, would you like our Wires promo delay unit for half price as well? And I was like, oh, well, what's half price? €29. Oh, well, okay then. And it's just... It's been a bad day for me.
No, this is this is a sick site. Yeah. They've got a hand clapper instrument.
Yeah.
Got Latin percussion.
It's all weird. It's all fun and it's all totally worth it. I just, you know.
It's awesome.
Bad. Yeah, you're going to spend a lot of money.
Oh. Yeah, okay, sorry. So it's a HC2 inspired instrument, yeah. God, it's good. Thank you for pointing my brain box to this. This is going to be an evening of fun now. Awesome.
I like the megaphone, which is, it emulates an amplified bullhorn / PA loudspeaker. So basically what it does is it takes your vocals and makes them sound bad, which is like fantastic. I can do that myself, mate. Don't worry about that. Like,
yeah, I'm fine. Thanks. Yeah. Keep your...
The megaphone noises can be enabled by the trigger button. There are two types of noise, button and burst. You can balance the mix between the two noises with the... Oh, wow, yeah. I mean, this sounds great. This sounds really very, very cool.
I will say, though, Jay, for vocal processing, for parallel processing, things like megaphone effects I've always loved. Yeah. So, you know, when you're like, I don't know, in a big chorus or something maybe, and you want to just like double track, but double track with a bit of nuance.
Totally. Yeah,
whenever I clock like super distorted double track vocals, it's a good time.
Yeah. I'd never thought about it actually, but yeah, you're right. You're right. That is cool.
Yeah.
Is
for cool. Like background processing in particular can be sick. Yeah, that's a really good spot, Joe, this audiothing.net.
Really fun. I think, you know, sorry, dear listener, they're not guitar specific, but I really think you could have a whirl of a time, like creating some really new, like if that was released as an effects pedal, I don't know how it would be. Maybe something where you could record something in, then play over the top of it and switch between what you were recorded in and what you're playing now. But I kind of feel like we'd all be like, oh, this is a great effect. Mm. This is a cool plugin that will do some weird and wonderful things for $9. So, you know, well worth the shout. Anyway, good. We should do some news. Let's do some news. I'll stop talking for a bit. Jay Cross, let's talk about this reimagining of Squire's most affordable series.
Yeah, so the Affinity series has been around since the, I don't know, 90s, mid-90s. And there's just like a whole new range of guitars coming out. So there's loads. I guess I'll just kind of pick out a couple of the highlights. So for me, the ones that are really worth looking at are the one. So the Jazzmaster seems to have been all over the internet over the last week or so. And that is really cool. It's coming with so unlike the older Jazzmaster, the original Affinity Jazzmaster, which I have in my head might have been HH. This has got proper Jazzmaster pickups, and it's also got a Strat style trem as opposed to the the hardtail that's on the current Affinity Jazzmaster, or like a big Jazzmaster tremolo, which I guess kind of makes sense because is that the sort of tremolo that you want to be getting for someone who is buying their, sort of first guitar, which I assume a lot of people are when it comes to the Affinity series. That comes in a lovely Lake Placid Blue or the Joe Brunton Special.
Yes!
Burgundy Mist.
Burgundy Mist. I might get this. I mean, and also, I totally agree. By putting a Strat trem on this, you've just made it a perfect starter guitar.
Yeah, totally. So that is really cool.
I can't believe Burgundy Mist exists on entry-level guitars.
Well, I mean, you want to talk about that. I don't know if you have seen the Tellies, but... there is there's a whole range of Tele Deluxes now as well. So HH72 style Teles, also available in Burgundy Mist.
What?
Yeah.
Infinity series.
Yeah.
I need to go check this out now.
There's also, I mean, if you're looking at the Burgundy Mist, there's also an HH Strat in Burgundy Mist.
Oh, no.
So the other one that's, in terms of guitars, the other one that's really worth pointing out is so I don't know if you remember, Joe, when we were at GAC, the Affinity Telly, the like Butterscotch Affinity Telly was always like a bit of a weird kind of, like non-traditional butterscotch color. It was like quite orangey.
I remember. Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, well, that is not the case anymore. It's now like a proper like butterscotch blonde. It just looks like a 52 telly. So that is really cool. And the other one, which I think is the one which the model that is really going to get people talking, is the Jaguar bass.
Absolutely.
It's, yeah, like 32-inch scale length. It's like super light. But the thing that's really worth pointing out about it is it's got this massive humbucker in the, I guess you'd call that the middle. I don't know. It seems to be, is it the middle or is it?
Yeah, it's bang in the middle, yeah.
Yeah.
Mid position.
And yeah, I mean, I just think it looks absolutely great. I mean, that is what people have been crying out for ages, to get that kind of like royal blood type.
It's very much a, you know, it's obviously royal blood influenced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've gone after that thing. But I just think it is, what a fantastic idea. I don't think we've had anything with that spec since the Mikey Way, since the Squire Mikey Way Mustang.
In terms of what? Having a...
Having a square like with a humbucker in the
output.
Middle. Yeah,
yeah,
a big
yeah,
high
yeah, yeah.
Something like that from... I think it's kind of an underrated thing for bass, like a big modern humbucker in the middle of the body. That seems like a really sensible setup, but it's
I also think having it. I also think having it in the Affinity range is really smart because it is going to work for people who want to, like maybe aren't bass players, but want to have something cool and interesting for not a huge amount of money.
Yeah,
just to like knock about at home.
Yeah, and it's under that £200 kind of price point as well, which
yeah,
is
yeah,
well within kind of affordability, isn't it? And
yeah.
Also, it's a 32-inch scale length, which I hadn't copped.
Yes.
Which is, yeah, it's going to benefit those people who, you know, unfortunately, much as I hate to admit it, there are people who find the Bronco is not actually to their absolute heart's desire. So that slightly longer scale length will kind of, hopefully kind of please that customer.
The only thing for you, Joe, that you won't like about this is it is a satin neck, unfortunately.
Oh, yes. They always are on all the Affinities, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, which is correct. The correct style of neck.
It's good neck, Joe.
And also not in Burgundy Mist. So these ones are in Lake Placid Blue, Black, or Charcoal Frost, I think.
I love Charcoal Frost. I was a big fan of that finish first time round. So
yeah. Nice. So, yeah, you know, there's other models there, of course. There's like, you know, new Strats, and there's a 5-string bass as well, 5-string jazz bass, which
awesome.
Is wild for the Affinity range.
That's incredible.
Yeah, really mad. They look good as well, like 3-colour sunburst and Olympic white. They look really, really cool. So that's really interesting. They appear to have left some, the Precision bass has got this superfluous second pickup there. Maybe that is just in the mock-ups. That I'm sure that won't be in the real bass. I'm sure it will just have the iconic and essential Precision bass pickup in the middle, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
Bridge jazz bass pickup.
I don't know what you're talking about. The thing that upsets me is, there's always that weird jazz bass. People love putting jazz bass pickups in P basses. You never, apart from the Mark Hoppus, you never see a P bass pickup in a jazz bass. It's almost like these people think they're better than me. That's how I feel. It's like, what, because I play a P bass, you think you're better than me? Is that what it is?
Jazz basses are the superior of the two.
They're not. It's true. They're not. He got it right first time, you know. Well, maybe not first, you know, with
second
the revisions.
Time.
Yeah, yeah.
57 onwards.
57, yeah. So. But yeah, really cool, you know, and great to see some kind of cool, interesting colours and like just a more kind of coherent range from the Squire. offering for the Affinities.
That's kind of it. It's good for it to have kind of a complete overhaul and refresh because it's been a range for so long. It's had so many different things introduced at different time periods.
Exactly. And I guess it's kind of, you know, you think about what Fender have done over the last, well, I guess since 2012, really. Well, you know, 2012 was the relaunch of the American Standards, and then the Elites replaced the Deluxes not too long after that, and then the Originals replaced the Vintage, and then obviously there's been all the other stuff that's come since, like the Players replacing the Standards. So I guess it kind of was about time that the core Squire ranges saw similar updates and revisions and stuff. But yeah, some really cool, really, really cool stuff. Really cool stuff in here.
Absolutely.
So yeah, cool to see them get out there.
Now, another brand that have kind of very close to our hearts that have been expanding their ranges recently is Reverend Guitars, friends of the podcast and, you know, makers of incredible equipment, have introduced a number of awesome new instruments for the start of 2021. Let's kick things off with a bass, Naomi, and yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So Reverend have, I'd say, an update rather than an absolutely brand new model, but they've updated the Basshauser Fatfish 32, which is, of course, the signature model of Brad Hauser, who you may know, listener from Critters Buggin' and Dead Kenny G's fame. So he had an original signature back in early Reverend days, actually. I don't know, Joe, are you familiar? Was it one of the...
It was one of the first ones, yeah.
Was it around 2005 or something like that?
Must have been. And they've really held their value, those early ones.
Yeah. Yeah, they have, along with the kind of Rumblefish sort of generation.
Yeah.
But yeah, so about 3 years ago, he brought out the original Basshauser Fatfish 32, which has an interesting configuration in the pickups. It is... Well, it's an interesting spec overall, actually, but in the pickups, it's, if you imagine, a reverse PJ. So there's a J-shape pickup in the neck and a P-shape in the bridge. The J one being Reverend's Jazz Bomb, and then the P-blade, which we've seen in the later Watt Player models in the bridge. So a fantastic sounding bass. Has it's semi-hollow as well. Has those wonderful neck inlays, and the update that we're seeing now is that they've put a thick brick in the neck instead. So that is the same sort of Music Man style pickup that is in the Mercalli models. So a huge subby woofy neighbor then to the P blade in the bridge.
It's definitely more in line of sort of a Billy Sheehan style loadout now.
Yes, it is, isn't it? There's not too much room left in the body for pickups now with the new config. But it looks fantastic. I'm dying to get my hands on one to try. Again, as always with Reverend, got really solid hardware, high mass bridge, your Hipshot ultralight tuners, proprietary pickups again, so made by Reverend for Reverend, beautiful sounding Carina body, got your five-piece neck. And just an all-round howling, growling machine.
With regards to the body, it also has that kind of raised centre block that we saw on the Greg Koch Gristlemaster.
Yes, it does. It does. What does that kind of ring for you, Joe, in terms of kind of...
I don't like the sound of 8-pole, those big Music Man pickups. I can never, it doesn't matter where you put them, I can never get them to sound good in an instrument. So, and I've steered away from Reverend's models that have had them before.
Yeah.
Like, my favorite is definitely the Reverend Triad, their 3-pickup jazz pickup. But they also do one with a short scale with just a precision pickup in the middle in their Set Neck series. And I really like that.
Yeah.
This is definitely a more interesting configuration. I would worry about a semi-hollow that's then got a big 8-pole humbucker in the neck. I'd worry about being able to control the low end on something like that. But if there was a brand that I trusted to do that well, it's certainly Reverend.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like it's the sort of thing that I'd have to try. I mean, I love the sound of single coil pickups. So I liked having that jazz pickup in there. I quite liked that it was in the neck and it was quite unusual. But, you know, this sort of configuration works for Billy Sheehan. So,
yeah,
it should be good enough for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll be very, very curious to try. But again, like you say, with Reverend, I think, and obviously in collaboration with their, you know, with their endorsed artists like Brad Hauser in this case, I think you would be hard pushed to find a company better able to build a solid and great sounding instrument.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of the thing about Reverend is they are absolutely fantastic at making really good signature models, which kind of brings us on to the second Reverend we're going to talk about, and the one that I'm most excited about, and I think is a pretty strong contender for Gear of the Year this year. It is the Reverend Greg Koch Gristle 90. That's right. It is a different and updated version of the Gristle Master, which was, you know, it was the guitar, dear listener, that I banged on about last year. It was the fantastic oversized T-style guitar that had the wonderful Fishman Fluence T-style loadout with that wonderful switch that flicks you between like a 50s and a 60s sounding telly, and the gorgeous sort of like roasted neck. Everything about that guitar was great. It just didn't do finishes that I was 100% into. Of course, this year they've introduced it in Sunburst, which I'm very excited about. But the Gristle 90, you may have guessed, it comes with a P90 loadout instead of the sort of telly style pickups. But that's not where it finishes. It also has a Bigsby and also a complete neck change. So it looks like now the necks, we've got like an angled headstock, and now the neck isn't like a roasted maple. I'm trying to see from the specs what the neck is now a three-piece Carina neck.
An ebony fingerboard as well.
Oh, I'm very excited about this. This is very
so
cool.
When you say it's got a angled headstock, you mean it tilts backwards?
Yeah,
right.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Because that explains why. Because it doesn't have a string tree, and that will be because it's because of the tighter break angle.
Yeah. Well, it's a 24 and 3/4 inch scale as well, this one.
As what's the previous Gristle Master?
I think 25.5.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure. I'd have to double check now. Maybe.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Wrong.
Okay.
This guitar. So I said this a bit.
You talk, and I'll have a look.
Yeah, I said this a bit before we started podcasting. I felt like the first one was like a T-style guitar that took some cues from a Firebird in that it had that raised center block, whereas this instrument now feels to me like a Firebird in the shape of a telly. Like, I feel like the focus has switched with this model, and I absolutely love it. I don't know if I love it more. I think I do. I think that might be just because there are finishes that I really like. There's a gorgeous, like a lovely sort of polished black, their midnight black finish, which I just think looks absolutely incredible, as well as their Venetian gold and their Bradford Beach blue. But for me, the midnight black.
Is that Bradford in Yorkshire?
Yeah, that's right. It's just like it looks like a beach, but there are like, you know, you can see there are loads of like used beer cans and stuff in the water and things like that. But you know, it's good and interesting. Thing.
Just looking this up, Joe, you're right. This is 24 3/4 inch scale, and the original Gristle Master was 25.5, which would also go some way to explaining the lack of string tree. But really interesting. The gold for me is the one. I think that looks really, really fantastic. It's a great, great looking guitar.
Very much a different instrument now, like the Bigsby, the pickup, and the scale length change, as
well as the
neck and board material. This isn't just an alternative to the Gristle Master. This is, you know, this is very, very different.
I mean, this feels almost like a you know, I guess it's almost like a 56 or 50, what year was the, 56 Les Paul with a Bigsby. You know, that's kind of the vibe that I'm getting from it. It's really, really interesting. Really, really interesting.
Yeah. I can't wait to try one. Definitely premium price point, like the last one. Looks like this one's going to be hitting the shelves around the $2,100 mark. So definitely, you know, in the top end of what Reverend do, but absolutely gorgeous. What do you think, dear listener? Is this one lighting you? I really think this is a strong contender for Gear of the Year. I think that is an absolutely stunning guitar. A wonderful blend of, you know, our two favourite classic guitar brands into one very, very cool instrument. Yeah, super awesome. Reminds me of the sort of Fender Parallel Universe series where Fender were, you know, making the Telecasters that had very much a sort of a Les Paul loadout.
I was reminded of the FSR Telecasters that they did. Do you remember the bound black and bound kind of burnt orange ones that they did around 10 years ago?
Oh, yeah, the 70...
The P90 ones.
Yes.
No, sorry, yeah, they
were 72, but they were P90s, I think, weren't they? Yeah, I think there was an orange. Wasn't there a blue, maybe?
It was definitely a black and definitely a burnt orange. And it kind of harks back to those for me.
They were very weird guitars. Cool, though.
Yeah.
Good, weird. Cool indeed. Now, that actually is all the time we have on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. You can, of course, join us on Patreon at patreon.com/guitarnerds for an extra episode every week, as has Patrick Harnady. Thank you very much, Patrick, for joining us on as a new Patreon. And you, dear listener, can become a Patreon supporter too for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you'll get this episode ad-free and early every week. $5 will get you access to the Patreon special episodes and our entire back catalogue. And $10 will get you the lot. Plus, I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode in my punk rock-inspired song. You can find us on all your favourite social media platforms and join the Guitar Nerds group on Facebook to get involved in our weekly episode discussion. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Ta-ra.
Let me tell you all about my Patreon backers. Some of them are crazy, some of them are crackers. Playing the guitar with the insane that the back hurts. Mudding all the square on coast with the rappers. I am the host, but I never seen a ghost. No concert deals, flames absolute growth. I just want retroness, I must confess. You Patreon backers are the best. It's like Eric Bond, John Conway, James Dodd, John Hackety, Paul, Julian Manning, Russell, Healing, Ty Allen, Yogi the Guitarist, Carl Harris, Carl Lufta, and Todd Sainz, Joe Hoffman, John Hughes, Brian Hansen, Shane Emman, Jeffrey Wax, Eric Hammer, Samuel Foss, Brian Ines, Devin Vanderlinden, Andy Manley, Scott Udding, Robert Butterworth, Simon Milbourne, Marcus Alcatawacky, and Stuart Robson, Christian Lund Hansen, Pete Adams, Michael McVeigh, and Eric Kyle, Lauren Peters, Joe Patrick, Ryan McDermott, Jack Cuffball, Ken Sayers, Abe Matthews, Guy Tobia, the band Sean Arbo, John Anglin, Dr. Amadon, and Ernie Cooper, Russ Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Burke, Aaron Sherman, Dave Lee, Jay Gray, Scott Kennedy, Blake Weiland, Christopher Loseth, Hans Ams, Derek Rich, Rob Nordvik, Steve Mercury, JD Short, and Brad Page, Andy McKenzie, and Robert Smith, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, Patreon backers, some of them are crazy, some of them are crackers. Playing the guitar all day and saying that the back hurts. Mudding all the square on coast with the rappers. I am the host, but I never seen a ghost. No concert deals, flames absolute growth. I just want retroness, I must confess. You Patreon backers are the best.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.